356,000 babies will be born around the world, 90% of them in the developing world.
Babies, 6 billion.
A struggle for water, food,
and all the children that follow.
Basic education and health care.
This is a vastly bigger baby boom. It's going to define the society of the 21st century.
All this week, we're talking about the planet's population hitting 7 billion people. That's estimated to take place on Monday, according to the United Nations. So, who feels crowded, huh, folks? Hard to say. Birth rates vary widely around the world, you know. The top 15 nations by birth rate, if you were to just measure it by birth rate, are all in Africa. Huge China doesn't even make the top 100. It comes in at about 166th. India's only 85th. And the USA, 154th by birth rate. The bottom 20 nations by birth rate are mostly industrialized countries, with Germany and Japan right at the bottom. That means in the industrialized world, nations are facing a static population that's not getting any younger and a worker population that may even be shrinking. Jay, do you have that clip of the old lady who's saying, "I've fallen and I can't get up"? You probably have it somewhere in the archives, right? This is the experience facing the world. Multiply that, "I've fallen and I can't get up," by about 900 million people.
Well,
and
yeah,
you've got the predicament for the industrialized world. Joining us now is Carl Haub, senior demographer at the Population Reference Bureau. Is that the future of the industrialized nations and their economies? They've fallen and they can't get up?
It certainly looks like that this year.
And as a demographer, how do we reference this 7 billion population mark with a real look at nations whose problem is not population growth, but population shrinkage or plateauing?
Well, you know, there's a real split, a divide, if you will, in population growth, where it's all occurring now in the developing countries, what we might call the poorer nations, where the developed countries, having children seems to be something that younger people today, it's not their highest priority.
It's not their highest priority. Right, exactly. So what does that mean economically, and what can countries do to adjust their population, maybe encourage immigration on one level, or even actually upwardly move the birth rate itself?
Well, you know, as far as raising the birth rate goes, countries are really trying now to do that. Some have been quite successful in the past, particularly, say, some Scandinavian countries and France in particular. But everywhere else, with one exception, it's failed completely. Russia in 2007 began to offer couples or women $9,000 for the second birth, not the first, but the second birth and the third, and if there ever would be a fourth birth, for that as well. That did work for a while. But now, probably due to the global recession, the birth rate has stopped rising in Russia.
We're speaking with Carl Haub, who's senior demographer at the Population Reference Bureau, and we're talking about not just the 7 billionth person who's the UN says will probably be born on Monday, but also the fact that our population is aging in a lot of industrialized nations. And, you know, Carl, this is often talked about as an issue, so much an issue that there are these incentives people give out for births in some of these countries that have low birth rates. But I wonder if it really is all bad. I mean, I wonder if really immigration isn't a better solution than incentives for people to have more kids. You know, it used to be an issue that people had too many kids, right? I mean, that they parents often had multiple children. They couldn't afford to send them all to school. I'm talking like 100, 200 years ago. But maybe at this point, it's just a matter of spreading people out more evenly.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's certainly true in part. But when you look at, let's say, Germany, where couples have averaged 1.5 children or less for 40 years, then what you get is a major disruption of the aid structure. So Japan, for example. Today in Japan, 23% of the population, almost a fourth, is ages 65 and over. And the Japanese Statistical Office projects that by 2050, 40% of the population will be 65 and over. I mean, that's just unheard of.
Well, what does that mean in terms of the 7 billion population and the nation states around the world? I mean, nations in the industrial world who have aging populations are going to be more dependent on populations in other parts of the world, and whether they actually move to get together, it certainly weakens the sense of national identity and encourages a more international or global identity, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely could. But, you know, we have to remember that unlike the U.S., European countries and Japan, they don't see themselves as melting pots. And in some cases, there are additional problems. In Japan, there's the problem of language. Most workers will have to learn Japanese, and they've had a very difficult time doing that. Plus, the Japanese really are not that accustomed to the idea of large numbers of foreigners living there.
Well, that's interesting. We're talking with Carl Haub, senior demographer at the Population Reference Bureau in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Carl, so Japan and Germany, they're crying out to the world.
I've fallen, and I can't get up.
Oh, boy.
But because they're such cultural cul-de-sacs, in a sense, they're not melting pots, it's going to be hard to assist them. It's the U.S. that has the right idea, and Brazil, maybe.
You mean in terms of the number of children?
In terms of what is the antidote to an industrial population whose birth rate is declining, if you're a melting pot, you're more likely to be able to seek help from other parts of the world to drive your economy and to get more young people into the workforce.
Oh, I mean, that's absolutely true. The white non-Hispanic population of the U.S., which is a complicated term for what we often call the majority, births and deaths among that group are almost equal. So if we did not have any immigration, that we would be in a situation much like some European countries. But because we have immigration, particularly Hispanic immigration, who have higher birth rates, we're doing exactly what you said.
So, Carl, if we look at the industrialized world and the declining birth rates or plateauing birth rates there, and then look at places like Africa, which have high birth rates, are the African nations going to succumb to the same pressures which cause the birth rate to come down in the industrialized world, or are they responding to a much different set of demographics going forward in this century?
Oh, it's very different, yes. Africa has a long, long way to go before the pressures of a rising economy and urbanization would do anything like that. In many, most sub-Saharan African countries, birth rates are pretty stable, somewhere 4, 5, 6, and even 7 children per woman.
And that means that the populations will continue to rise. And if there are constraints, they won't be industrialized, affluence-based constraints. They'll be more planetary constraints, resources, et cetera.
Yes, and actually we can see that happened in Bangladesh, which is a very small country with around 160 million people. It's about the size of the U.S. state of Arkansas. Imagine having 160 million people there.
Now, that does sound crowded for the first time. Carl Haub, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure, thank you.
Carl Haub is a senior demographer at the Population Reference Bureau. He joined us from Fredericksburg, Virginia. We're talking all week about the 7 billion population. The United Nations expects us to actually reach that point. The 7 billionth person will be born on Halloween. Other estimates suggest it might take place next year. But what do you think about all that? You know how to reach us, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or post a comment on the population explosion at thetakeaway.org.
If you're part of the population explosion or maybe aging population, you can share your story at thetakeaway.org, or you can just text those comments to 69866 and then type in the word take. A listener in Massachusetts texted this: yes, incentives for the first 2 children, better maternity benefits, and support for secondary education. But a listener in Coventry, Rhode Island disagrees that we should not offer incentives for citizens to reproduce. This listener says, no, the world population is still growing faster than the planet will be able to sustain. Give us your thoughts. Where do you come down? Should we incentivize reproduction or not? And speaking of large populations, by the way, one of the world's most populous countries, India, celebrating a major holiday today. So happy Diwali to all our listeners who celebrate the Festival of Lights. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm kind of the old guy on this show.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
You just can't get
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.